Hey, everyone. You are listening to the Divergent Conversations podcast. We are two neurodivergent mental health professionals in a neurotypical world. I'm Patrick Cassell.
And I'm Dr. Neff.
And during these episodes, we do talk about sensitive subjects, mental health, and there are some conversations that can certainly feel a bit overwhelming. So we do just want to use that disclosure and disclaimer before jumping in. And thanks for listening. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Divergent Conversations. It has been a while, and there is admittedly a lot going on, both in our lives and obviously in the lives of all of you. I don't know where to start with this. We've been like rambling off screen before recording because we're trying to figure out how to make this podcast work, make it useful, have it be timely in this moment, and also honor our capacity. And it's feeling increasingly more and more challenging to do all of those things simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. I was literally just having the same thought around like, how do we enter this conversation? There's so much time has passed since we were recording. Like our last batch record was in August. And the world, it's, yeah. I don't know how we're going to get into this conversation. I do trust once we get into it, it'll be a good and connecting conversation. But it is a bit hard to find like our entry point or our foothold.
Yeah. And I think what we had talked about was for a while, we were going to rearrange how this podcast comes out because both of us have a lower energy season right now, and we have a lot of demands on our plate. Both of us are writing books with manuscripts that are due in dates that felt like they were very long ago, and they no longer feel that way. But
it happens so quickly, right? At one point, really, like July 2026, it's like, oh, I've got all the time in the world. Like, mm-hmm. What?
Yeah, May 2026 felt like an eternity ago. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's so much time. Mm-hmm. And now the walls are really closing in and creating a lot of pressure. But I think that although that is true, I think what's really also coming up a lot for both of us and for a lot of you listening is just this every day, it feels like there is just a barrage of information, atrocity, a new horror, so to speak, stuff that just completely consumes and overrides. And it's really, I think that's really challenging to meet the moment as a source of media, as a podcast. You know, we wrestle with how much of ourselves to put into the show, and we put a lot of ourselves into it, a lot of vulnerability, but we've definitely tried to figure out where do we want to be in terms of how we show up right now in this moment, because
yeah. We've nodded to it throughout the last year around like fear,
yeah,
for both of us, but also for our families. And like, and it's interesting, I think I feel like I've hit a point where I'm less afraid. I think partly because I there's so much that feels scary and terrible. And then the thing that is giving me hope is seeing like it's the American people who are creating change right now. And it's like people standing up and using their voice, and it's people coming together and community and connection and organizing. Like that's what is pushing, if there is any like pushing toward better or goodness, like it's that. And so I do feel like I've hit a threshold of like, okay, it's and that might shift, right? But it's no longer fear that's holding me back. One thing that, and I was talking, my team and I were talking about this yesterday, And I want to like try to put my thoughts together in an essay on this, but just the complexity of having a large account when all of this is happening, and like how to show up, and it's something that actually I think about quite a lot. And one of the like paradoxes I often feel, or the tensions, is one of the things when everything around us is falling apart, one of the things, especially as autistic people, that can be regulating and soothing is when we have like some anchors of normalcy, right? When we open up our phones or the news and it's all like rereading the same headline over and over about the terrible things happening, that can be really dysregulating. And so sometimes I'm like, well, I want to offer like, okay, this is a place you can come to learn about neurodivergence. You're going to get kind of the same, this will be a predictable amidst all the unpredictable, will be a predictable presence around what kind of education you're getting. But then there reaches a point, and I think this is what we've struggled with on the podcast, where it's like, but it's so weird to be talking about like autism or ADHD or sensory when it feels like the world around us is falling apart. And so then if your world is making content and you're not a journalist, but it's like, it's just like, how do you show up in this moment?
Yeah. Yep. For sure. And I think sometimes some of this stuff feels kind of trivial. Like, how can I go
and
about something or talk about something when there's so much more happening in this moment that feels like it's so much more significant and more important and has more implication.
Yeah. Than like RSD or sensor. It's like, and not that those things stop mattering on a personal day to day, but it's just, it feels weird to talk about that stuff when, you know, when the democracy is under attack, when like our, you know, I think just before we started recording I don't want to like, that's part of it. I don't want to be like just injecting. I know people are already like inundated with these headlines, so I don't want to be yet another like voice injecting more of it. But yeah, just when it feels like safe, secure elections and democracy is under threat, it is, how do we write books about autism and ADHD or like content about it? And then, yeah, it's complex.
Yeah, there is a day a couple weeks ago. I don't even know what I'm fond to say when I say. When the autistic Barbie came out, and that was like creating waves within the autism community. And a very complex of emotions around it. And so that was one story, right? So I'm like, do I weigh in on this? Then other stuff is going on. Then we have people being shot and killed in the middle of the streets while protesting and standing up for their communities and trying to protect each other, and mutual aid requests going on, and stories about whatever else happening in that day and in that week. And it can feel so, I don't know, I think that sometimes it feels meaningless. And I try to think really hard around these times about, if this feels meaningless, but all of these people have all these opinions about everything that's happening. And I don't mean meaningless, like it has no meaning, but like, what's the point of having certain conversations about certain topics when other atrocities are happening? I get into this weird mindset where I don't know what to do. And all I know to do is to support my community, to support things that I can control. Like, my mind goes into, okay, where can I donate money? Where can I donate resources? Who can I help? How can I amplify? Because I think that resistance is interesting, especially in the community, in the disability community, about like, how do I show up? How do I resist? How do I advocate? A lot of people feel like they're not doing enough, or feel like I can't resist in a way that is going to be acceptable for people around me, or I just don't feel like I can do that safely enough in any capacity. And it's such a mind fuck. It's just so overwhelming in so many ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that can be part of the paralysis, I think, is it, I mean, before we started recording, we were talking about decision fatigue and decision paralysis of like, and especially with our all or nothing thinking, right? Of like, there's a right way to get involved or a wrong way. And then there's so many different things happening and there's so many different ways to respond that, yeah. And I think that's also part of the design, right? I think we've talked about this in the past, but the whole like flood the zone is literally part of the strategy they use of, you know, if like even today alone, I think there's probably three headlines that could lead to a reasonable impeachment. And yeah. It's like, well, if three of these things come out every day, people can maybe attend to one or two, but right. It's like you can sneak in a lot of things that way. And it can create that paralysis. And that is part of why in our content, I'm like, okay, how much do we talk about this? Is this contributing to paralysis or is this helping? That's one of the things I often think about.
Right.
I am circling back to your idea of community. I think that is the question. It's something I've felt an energy shift as you and I have shifted in our conversations around what does it look like to get involved in, I know you're doing a lot in your local community, to get involved in supporting the efforts of people who are organizing. Like there's beautiful things happening there. And I think that's so important, is finding the entry point to something where we have something to do with this energy that comes up. Like I've been doing about talking a lot about the nervous system and the stress cycle, and our bodies create arousal when we're under threat. And often a lot in like pop psychology and in psychology, we talk about how do we downregulate that? But there's times that we don't want to downregulate it. There's times we want to, that arousal is there for a purpose. It mobilizes us to act. And so I know that's been so huge for me, is figuring out where to channel that so that I don't fall into that paralysis. And so that I am channeling that energy towards something that makes it feel, makes me feel like I have a little bit of agency amidst this hellscape.
Yeah. I think having a little bit of agency is vital. Because otherwise, you know, there can be days where I personally can spend days doom scrolling through social media and listening to reel after reel or reading story after story, and that becomes really overwhelming really quickly.
Yeah, that's so jarring on the nervous system. Yeah,
and you know I can get consumed by it, I can hyper fixate on it, and before I know it, it's like 2 or 3 days of just just flooding your nervous system with image and story and narrative, and all of a sudden like I'm dysregulated and I'm not sleeping and I'm more irritable and I'm, you know, all of these things. It's like a domino effect, and trying really hard to figure out different ways to move through the day. And I'm not saying like, don't go out and protest, don't go out and resist, don't go do the things you're doing, but like maybe there are subtle changes that we can make that allow us to stay a little bit more anchored in and more regulated, like starting your day a little bit differently instead of opening the phone and immediately scrolling through stories. And like we said, community and just getting into community, whether it be, and you know, it can be so many different ways that you can participate in your local community. Whether you're fundraising, whether you're donating, whether you're supporting a local mutual aid or nonprofit, whether you're making phone calls or sharing information or being one of the people organizing or actually out on the front lines protesting. Like there are lots of ways, and it really does not have to look identically across the board. And I think sometimes we can get into this almost like shame or guilt mentality of I'm just not doing anything or I'm not doing enough. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly not helpful. Not only in general.
And the way that, like the way neurodivergent people might get involved, like most things will likely look different. You know, it might not be the front lines protests, but it could be, you know, there's ways of using our creativity or our spreadsheet skills for those who are systematizers. Like there's, it might look different. It might look quieter, and that's okay. I'm glad you're naming that, because it can also, I think when we live through experiences like this, it can bring on shame, and shame would be another emotion that would demobilize us and get us stuck. And so if we fall into that shame of like, well, I'm not doing enough, or I'm not doing it how maybe even we want to be able to do things.
And with that, you know, like I can get into that mentality of I'm not doing enough, right? And that can be brought on by that 3 days of doom scrolling. And then I start to get into this storyline of like, okay, platform and privilege, you need to be doing more. And then I will tell myself like, you're doing nothing at all. And if I'm more regulated, I can look at it from the perspective of, here are all the ways that you are helping the causes that you care about.
Yeah.
And I can come at it with a very different approach, opposed to that like black and white, all or nothing, catastrophic thinking. And that's, I just know that I can have more of an impact in how I want to show up and support if I'm doing it from a place where it feels really intentional and value-centered and anchored into the things that matter to me. Because we can't support all the causes that are going on at all the times. There's too many to count, not just here, but everywhere. And it's really important to try really hard to figure out what feels important to you. And I think that's another piece of this as well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I also like have been paying attention more and more to just people who are a part of more marginalized groups, who have more marginalized identities, and how they resist and how they show up. And we've talked about this on here, but I think white people being oppressed is relatively new for us. And
we don't do it well. We don't do it well.
We do not. I notice a lot of my friends and family members, especially who are Black friends and family members, for them, a lot of times resistance can be joy. Resistance can be
pleasure. Yeah. This is where it's interesting. It was a year ago I started reading Adrienne Marie Brown's work, who's become just like an anchoring kind of voice for me this year. And I think they talk about it. I think the roots are in the Black movement around the idea of pleasure as resistance. And I love that idea. And I think it's so, because it's part of, and this is also where, when we've talked about, I struggle in knowing how to show up. I feel like I've broken record, but I'm always like, I want, because we've recorded some political podcasts that we haven't chosen to release. And it's the reason I didn't feel comfortable releasing was, I was like, I feel like I'm asking listeners to hold my emotion. Like it's not metabolized enough. Yeah. And so the thing that I think Black and Brown communities really model in their organizing is, at the heart of it, they're so good at staying connected to their humanity. And they move from that energy. I think, and these are broad sweeping statements, but I think it's a little bit easier when white people, when we experience oppression, I think we often lead in our anger in response. And not that our anger isn't justified or valid. It absolutely is. And there is a difference when it's a movement. If are we leading with our humanity and inviting others to like reconnect with their humanity, like basically creating an image of hope of like, look at how beautiful like community can be, and it can be when we anchor into this versus leading with anger and spreading anger. I've been re-listening to some dark comedy, because that's one way I cope. And I re-listened to, I don't know that this would be dark comedy, but Hannah Gatsby's Nanette, which is just so well done. And Nanette is like, it breaks the model of what comedy is. It's really also about advocacy. And at the end, they talk about how, throughout it, they talk about how laughter is contagious, which I think is part of like pleasure. Mm-hmm. But they also talk about how anger is contagious. And they say it so well. They talk about how, like, their anger is valid, but they also don't, like, they didn't want, they're like, I don't want to spread anger. I don't want you to all leave here angry. Like, and they talk about the power of story, that story is the thing that can, like, mobilize people toward, you know, toward action. So story, humanity, pleasure, laughter. Yeah, these are the things that are inspiring me right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's very good stuff, because I think that stuff is the stuff that gives you some semblance of, like, light at the end of the tunnel. It's really easy to go into hopelessness, demoralization. It's kind of the goal, honestly, is that people become so hopeless that they feel so defeated that there is no other outcome than to mm-hmm. just stop and to cease resisting in any sort of fashion or form. And one thing that makes, you know, even just watching some of the protests that are happening across the country, the thing that feels beautiful to me is the unification of people from all different walks of life showing up and supporting one another. And I think that's really wonderful to see. And I see that happen after disaster, you know, like I saw that happen here after Hurricane Helene. Like, community came together after catastrophe. It was a hellscape. It was horrifying. And it didn't matter who you were just supporting each other because that humanness kicks in. And I wish we saw more of that, but I don't think we see none of that. And I think that's really important to acknowledge of, like, I wish that we saw more unification. And I also acknowledge that we are not seeing zero unification.
Yeah. 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 I had a thought the other week. It was kind of a sad thought, but it's also, I don't know, this is maybe the silver of hope I'm holding on to, that, like, it's so unfortunate that it often takes, like, the worst of humanity coming out to bring out the best of humanity.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's so much of what we're seeing now is, it is amazing when we do see that, when we do see how it brings out the best of humanity. Like, yeah, I've found myself choking up when I'm reading about or like watching about some of the things happening in Minneapolis with the way people are caring for neighbors.
It's unbelievably powerful, the messages that are sent when people are standing up for each other and protecting each other and doing whatever they can to support one another in times where it might feel like there are no outcomes that feel positive or favorable. And I like seeing all the people, like, singing, dancing, playing music in the streets, like, supporting local businesses, like, just doing everything you can not to let this destroy you or tear you down. And I think that is just such a beautiful representation of what this country can be at times, mm-hmm. where there truly can be unification through culture and race and identity. And I think that is the stuff that makes all of this worth continuing to fight for.
Yeah. Yeah. In a, like, weird way, I don't know if it's like I've been Overton windowed, which is when, like, you get so exposed to the bad that something that was less bad all of a sudden looks really good. But, like, I find myself, like, I've always been someone who I have to be cautious, because I've ever since my, like, 20s, I've kind of been overly negative of America, and I've been very outspoken about it, of, like, all these other countries do all these things better. But I found myself, like, appreciative of our, like, of aspects of America, of, like, it's hard to explain. Maybe it's just I'm like, you know, the fact we used to have checks and balances seems pretty cool. Things like that. Or even, like, I think, what is it? I'm finding myself moved by, like, members of military who are actively protesting and saying, no, this is not the American way. I will not do this. Or
And I think we'll see more and more acts of defiance as things potentially intensify, and we're just gonna have to rely on each other. I think that for me is the like message that continues to be pretty pervasive. And I think it also means, like, I'm just thinking of all the ways you can do this, like donating to charities. Like, I donate to ACLU and Democracy Forward and SEMA and all of the Immigrants Defense Council organizations that I can. Like, there are so many ways to feel like you are doing something. And I also think it starts with, like, we talk about this all the time, but curating your content. Like, there are content creators on both sides of things, on both extremes, that make a lot of money creating content, creating controversy, stirring up emotion.
Well, that's what the algorithm rewards, is like things that stir up emotion. And it's, I have a mixed, I always want to be cautious when I say this, because social media can be so good for so many things. I do think because the algorithm rewards things that hijack our nervous system, especially during moments like this. Like, I just don't open social media often at all. So I went on for the first time in a long time. Because I was wanting to, because here's what social media is really good at. They're really good for me to find, like, where are the mutual aid places. I needed to do that on social media. That's one thing that social media is really good at, is like the quick collective action. Yep. So I was on it because I was wanting to see what are some of the mutual aid projects happening.
Yep.
And I felt almost like vertigo so quickly just by scrolling. And I was like, whoa, this is so overwhelming. I think especially, you know, I'm more autistic forward. It's like the context shifting and the visual shifting, but then it's not just that, like, every 30 seconds is a new visual and context and voice my system is adapting to, but it's also typically an attention grabbing headline, because that's what's in the algorithm.
Yeah.
And I also might encounter the same headline like 10 different times. So it's just constant injection into the nervous system. So I think for getting news during hard times, like, I know for me, finding long form that works better for my system. And then Brett from Neurodivergent Insights, they shared this idea with me that I really liked, is, and I think they heard it somewhere, of like finding 2 to 3 sources, that's more regulating. And I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, that's what I actually intuitively do. Like, it's Heather Cox Richardson and like Pod Save America. Those are kind of my 2 I go to. And I hear less, part of it is I'm not hearing the same headline over and over that way, but it's also like, I know their voices, I know the context. Yeah. And so my system's not needing to adapt as much. So that is, I think if people are really kind of struggling with, there's too much arousal in their bodies and they're feeling immobilized, that might be something to play with because I do, it just is really hard for our system to take in this kind of content with that much change over and over and over.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I like both of those accounts as well. And then Amanda's Mild Takes is another one. And she just, the way she lays out information in such a calm way and just understands the moment so well is super important for me. And listen, social media, for those of you listening, I am not knocking it, has a lot of benefits, like Megan Anna said. And some of the benefit right now, given the moment and the time that we are in, is capturing stuff that is happening in real time and having people be able to access it and share that information if our media is not going to do that job. And if there is going to be suppression of information. So that is absolutely wonderful, because without that, I mean, you would not know any of this stuff was going on if you weren't right there in mm-hmm. the middle of
yeah.
it. And that is unbelievably important right now. But I also think like what will happen, right, is like you'll like a post, you'll share a post, maybe you'll hit that new Instagram thing that shares the stories with people you know. And then all of a sudden your whole algorithm is full up.
Is that, yeah, yeah.
So I've started to reclaim my algorithm by doing that on all the animal videos I see, all the Lord of the Rings videos I see. Like I'm just trying to like make my social media accounts and algorithms feel at least a little bit more regulating because yeah. I admittedly, as we've talked about, spend a lot more time on there than you do. And that's not in a good way. But like the only way I can do that is to create a little bit more of like calm and ease and just joy too. Mm-hmm. Like watch my wife on social media. She just scrolls through things and is laughing constantly and is like, I'm like, how is this happening? I don't
because her algorithm is probably so different.
I know. It's like, it's amazing.
Luke and I did that once where we were like, let's just swap algorithms for a moment. And like his is like football or European football. So soccer mm-hmm. and like vegan cooking. And it's like so peaceful. And yep. he's scrolling through mine. He's like, wow, that's really overwhelming. I was like, yeah. Well, and it's, I guess maybe that's part of, like, we talk about intentionality a lot. Maybe it's zooming out to be like, what is the purpose or the function of social media? So if the function is, I use it to get, like, views of what's happening on the ground, then I think that's a great algorithm for that purpose, especially if they know this is why I use it.
Mm-hmm.
I think what gets complex is we use social media for so many different things. And one of the myths I'd love to bust is this idea that scrolling is relaxing. Like there's nothing, people are like, I'm just going to like, you know, I'm going to relax for a little bit. There's nothing relaxing about scrolling unless you're like your spouse or my spouse where their algorithms are like beautifully curated to be that. So I think it's zooming back to be like, if social media is something we want to be relaxing, a place we escape the world, helping tailor our algorithm to be that. If it's the place we go to stay like up to date.
Yeah.
Because there's also like a lot of independent journalists now who curate those videos for us. So like Midas Touch Network, that's another one I will watch when my system can tolerate a little bit more visceral, because yeah. they will like curate the clips.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's not what we want to use social media for, there's other places we can access that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yep. It is a moment, that's for sure. I think
it's a moment. Yep.
It was just January forever. Felt like we were in January forever.
That was a long, long month. I mean, okay, so we actually did record a January New Year's episode and it was gonna release this Friday, and we're like, it feels so long ago and it feels so out of touch.
Yeah. 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 So just, you know, that's something that we both wrestle with on here sometimes, is just trying to meet the moment and also do so in a way where it's like, I'm already running on fumes and low capacity. How do we figure out a time to record between both of our schedules and lives? And I think that's challenging,
mm-hmm.
While also trying to preserve your peace and peace of mind,
yeah.
you know, and then the flip side, of course, is like once we get into a rhythm and I'm like, oh, I feel really connected to Meg and Anna, then I start to feel like, ooh, this is really energizing. I should do this more.
Yeah. I know. Like even I'm thinking about like from when we started recording to now, I'm like, oh, I've got more energy because I'm in connection. Connection is what we as humans need right now. But yeah, it probably is a good time to kind of fill listeners in on like we're not completely sure what the next 6 months will look like with the podcast, but we've talked about restructuring it to make it more sustainable. Cause it was the releasing weekly. I've kind of been saying for a few years that felt unsustainable, but I think with this year that just has felt harder and harder.
Yeah. Yeah. Harder and harder for a lot of reasons, and energy, capacity, other projects, just life getting in the way. And it's felt more heavy trying to figure out ways to continue it in a way. Even when we went to batching at first, that felt really good. And the first run, like the Divergent or the
Burnout City, that was like, I think, my favorite season we've done. Yeah.
And somehow we just synced up perfectly for that.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I think that's what you always try to recreate, you know, is like, how do we recreate that moment, that energy level, that shared?
Like, even our early days, like before we were like, before it got big, because we neither of us were expecting it to get big. So it was like, no stress. There's very little stress on like all of the kind of production around it or sponsors. And it's like, I kind of want to go back to those days, but also maybe with like, we record when we have capacity and we release when we have a new episode to release.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that goes back to what we've said a lot during this hour of like intentionality. So not just releasing because we have to, because we have people who are paying us to release episodes, or not just releasing because we feel the pressure to do so, but just releasing episodes that feel good to us and feel congruent with both of ourselves and our businesses and our platforms and just what we want to put out into the world. I think it's a privilege to be able to get to be picking and choosing in terms of how we want this to go.
Yeah.
I'm thinking now that we're doing this, I'm like, we should have made that an intro in case people didn't make it all the way through, but you know, that's okay. We can clip it.
We can. Yes.
Yeah. We'll figure it out.
Make a yes. Or we could, people will figure it out. People will see that they're not dropping. Yeah. Yeah. And so one thing we have talked about is, especially once both our manuscripts are in, like doing a more contained, like an actual proper season, like a 10 episode season, and releasing that, which would probably be in the fall. And like shifting more toward like actual seasons where there's a break and then there's more episodes. I think we've both said like, we'd love to be more intentional with the podcast, but then I think with how many episodes we've been doing and with how busy we are, it's been hard to do that. So I think that's kind of like a guarantee that we'll be back with a slightly different structure, with a like smaller season at some point this year. And in the meantime, we've talked about if we want to hop on and talk and record and upload it, we will.
Yeah. 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 It takes a lot of the pressure off of playing like calendar Jenga as well, and trying to figure out time zones and all the things that we're always navigating behind the scenes, because I'd say 3.5 years in, we never really found the right like flow or system in terms of how do we make this seamless. I just don't know a way, unless we're in person
That. And also I've thought about this a lot. So like one of the criteria of autism is difficult with reciprocity, and like that actually is a thing. And I think one of the challenges we've had is we both run businesses, and then we've come together to create Divergent Conversations. And it's like your team does half, my team does half, but no one clearly owns it. And I think for both of us, like I've said, I feel like as we were talking about this, I was like, I feel like this will probably always feel like a side hustle unless I like found a way to integrate it into Neurodivergent Insights workflows. And I imagine in some way you maybe feel similar of like, it's weird to half own something. And that's part of the autistic experience, is for a lot of us, it's like, if I don't fully own it, it's hard to know which pieces to move. It's hard to coordinate that with someone else. And I think that's been, it's weird, but it makes sense. Two autistic people struggling with reciprocity, like it would make sense that this like third little thing we've made that doesn't fit in either of our businesses is just kind of been hard to fully find a flow with.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's just always been the X factor of like the challenge of it, which I appreciate for us, like for the last 3+ years navigating it in a very wonky way. Because, you know, I've been in just unbelievably grateful for everything this podcast has offered in terms of connection and community and how much support has been offered to so many different people. Like, I'll never lose sight of that. And I think that's important to just, you know, that's always what helped us keep going when we had to navigate all of these complex behind the scenes, like logistics of two humans who own businesses, who have different time zones, different scheduling needs, different
circadian rhythms. Like, by the time I wake up is when your body is like shutting down.
I know. I can already feel it right now.
Yeah. My body's finally like, oh,
yeah,
we can be awake now. I'm okay with this. 11:20.
Yeah. And I think we've thrown around the idea of potentially trying to find a recording studio and do our seasons, maybe potentially in person together, and mess around with that idea. So we're kind of trying to figure out what comes next, but we expect to have another season out in the fall. We just don't know when. And we'll obviously keep people updated when we have that information. And yeah, like you said, if the moment is right, then we can both hop on and record about something that feels good, but and finish these manuscripts that So do you want to do the final awkward goodbye for now?
I think I just did it. I was like, I think that awkward pause was with I think it was hitting me of like, it feels more like a goodbye than I was thinking it would feel like. So I was like, I think I was just noticing that. I wasn't even at the point of processing. But it's not a goodbye, but I guess it is a goodbye of the way we've done it the last 3.5 years as we shift to something that will hopefully feel more sustainable. And I'm happy to do the awkward goodbye. And
okay. I think it's been done.
Oh, I guess. So we always do our like subscribe, blah, blah, blah. If you do want to, oh my gosh, my voice. See, we're definitely at our time limit. If you do want to subscribe, that'll guarantee like when we come back, that way you'll see the show. Otherwise it'd be easy to miss. So, if you subscribe when we're back in the fall, we'll be in your algorithm. So wherever you find podcasts, that would be a good time to do that if you're not yet.
Well done. Well done. Yeah. So we will see you in a couple of months. Be safe. Do what you need to do to get through. I think that's important right now. And don't do it alone. Community and connection are going to be absolutely crucial. So, all right.
Hey, it's Dr. Neff here. This season, we are clearly talking about autistic burnout, a topic that NeuroDivergent Insights has covered extensively. So if you would like more resources to supplement your learning, we've put together a page where we've curated all of our autistic burnout resources, free and paid resources. We have lots of articles on autistic burnout. We have an upcoming free email course that's going to be released soon. We have workbooks on autistic burnout. So if you'd like to check out our resources, again, both free and paid, you can go to neurodivergentinsights.com/burnout-resources. It's linked below and in the show notes. I hope you don't need these resources, but if you do, they are there for you.